What's up, guys? Back to CaliCast. Unnamed version of the CaliCast, but we've got a couple good names out there. The Alpha Gambit. I think old Jay from Australia was saying Pawn Stars. I like that. what else we got?
Might get in trouble for that one.
Yeah, maybe a little bit, yeah.
But he spelt it porn, like P-A-W-N, not...
P-A-W-N.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. It works.
So that could work. But like here today with Alex Munoz, Xander, as many people in Texas know you.
Yep.
Alexander is the full name. But also joined by the Peanut Gallery, we got Ricardo Ramos in here. Both these guys are fighting on April 17th. Opponent for you is Penna, the Violet Bob Ross, which, you know, was scheduled prior and then fight fell out, so it's good to get that one in. He's an awkward, long guy. And Ricardo, who we got?
I got Bill Aljo. Same style.
Yeah,
same
Bill. Bill, how do you say the last name?
Aljo.
Bill Aljo. So that's a replacement fight from the original opponent. But we're going to try our best. This actually tests your chess game. I mean, so you have an excuse. I had an excuse last time.
I'm new to chess, so that's my excuse.
You're new to chess. Come on, man. You're playing a lot. You're playing every day.
Yeah, I did. I started playing about probably like 5 or 6 months ago, but I have been playing quite a bit.
All right, let's go here.
Here and there.
And so the challenge is to keep the conversation going while we're playing. Of course, we can cut out some dead time, so if you really need to think, go ahead and do it. But let's have a good conversation and a nice battle.
Let's go.
Which side? Which hand?
Oh, right hand.
Is that?
Right.
I don't know which one's. Okay, you go first.
All right.
And last game we played ended up in a draw.
Yep.
I think I was up by a lot, and you came back.
I don't know. I remember dominating that game for the most part, and then at the end.
I think it was the other way around. I can't remember, but anyways, your turn. Go ahead.
No, it was pretty close. It was back and forth the whole time.
So I think probably the most interesting thing that's happened lately, and we'll get over a bunch of stuff about you, Alex, as an individual, as a fighter, where you come from, how you grew up, etc. But most recently, we had your car stolen.
Yes.
Which was crazy. For those who don't know, I have a place downtown in the heart of downtown, Sacramento, and Alex lives there. I live there. Cody Garbrandt lived there. You know, it's been kind of a it's been a spot that a lot of great fighters have been in. Alex is the next in line there.
That's
but
it.
The car got yanked
from
the driveway, and Alex is like, hey, man, I'm going to be late for practice. First one, here you go. Keep your eye on this. Check.
Oh, God. Just like that, huh? Get out of there. Get out of here.
There we go. All right.
No. You took your hand off of it.
You took your hand off the first one. Come on, man.
But I was in check, so I can't make that move.
You can't. Hold on 1 second.
All right. That's all right.
No, hold on 1 second. Let me see here. I'm going to take my hand off just for a second so I can look.
Well, you've already done it once, so what's it hurt to do it twice?
That's true. Very good point.
If you're not cheating, you're not trying. That's it. You can take my horse.
That's a good idea. I might do that. Thanks. Thanks for the idea.
If you need any help.
So give us the lowdown on that, on that car story. So what time was it? Early in the morning you saw it? When was the last time you saw the car?
So it was at early in the morning. My girl woke me up. She said, did you leave your car parked at the gym? I said, no, I didn't. I knew right away. I jumped out of bed and I ran outside and it was gone. And So basically, I knew what had happened. My car's been broken into a couple times, and I went out there, knew it wasn't there, filed a police report, and then I found it really fast. I found it in like 15 minutes.
So you called me, you said, hey, dude, car's gone, can't come to practice.
I said I couldn't come to practice, filed a police report, and then felt bad for myself for like 15 minutes, just wanting to cry, and then I ended up just going out looking for it, and I found it. So,
when you go out and look for it, I mean, not everyone tuning in will be from Sacramento, so they don't understand. But especially during quarantine, there's been like a like homeless encampment takeover in yes. different areas throughout Sacramento.
Right.
So,
well, and I think what happens is they come from San Francisco. I think San Francisco gets overrun with them, so they give them free tickets out. And a lot of them, Sacramento is one of the closest places, so they send them out this way. And yeah, that's what ended up happening.
So you went to the local homeless encampment, or you toured around a couple of them?
Yeah, basically, when my girl goes for runs, I tell her, avoid this spot, don't run here. So those are the first places I went. I went and checked out those spots, and I found it right away. When I got there, I started just kind of staking out the area. And I called first the dealership to see if my car had GPS, and I found out it didn't. And then in my head, I was thinking, man, it's probably chopped up somewhere already.
Sure.
And then I go, let's see. Then, yeah, I started looking for it, and I found it, like, right away. And there's nobody in it. I went and walked by it.
All documented on Instagram, by the way.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like,
all my gear was taken out of it. And so I called the police. I let them know, hey, I found my car. Come and get it. I wait, like, probably 40 minutes. Nobody comes. So I start looking around myself. I see this guy, and he's walking past, and he goes, hey, you looking for somebody? And I was like, no, I'm good. And I just keep, like, walking. And I double take him. And he's wearing all my snowboard gear that I had left. He was wearing my jacket, my pants, all my stuff. So I double back around and I start following him. I follow him back to my car. Him and his buddy get in, and I'm calling the police. I'm like, "Where are you guys at?" So I start following him.
Are the police being? I mean, like, you're like,
they said they're on the way, but I don't know. Yeah. I don't know where they were because this was like an hour and a half after.
So this guy's wearing all your gear. The one you talked to, or his buddy?
The one I talked to was wearing all my stuff. And then
you didn't say, like, hey,
I didn't say anything because I didn't know if he had my keys on him. I wanted to make sure that, like, I wanted to get all my stuff back.
Yeah.
So basically hunt these guys down. I chased him down for probably like 5 blocks. Finally, he jumps out of the car. He's like, you have a problem? I said, yeah, man, you're in my car. that's my vehicle. And then his buddy took off running right away.
Wait, so you're following them in your car?
I'm following them, and after like 3 blocks, they realized I was following them. So they blew a stop sign, and I blew it right after them. And I think that's when they knew, because then they started, like, I started chasing.
You're in a high speed chase with your own car with homeless people wearing your clothes.
Right. And I'm on the phone with the cops, just like telling them all the streets that I'm passing. Then
what are they telling you? Because I'd imagine they're telling you, like, hey.
They're telling me not to chase them.
Yeah, exactly.
They're telling me to let them get away with my car.
I figured that's what they'd be saying.
Yeah, no.
Well, they gotta mitigate their damage. They gotta take care of the risk, obviously. So
of course. So I end up.
This is great.
I end up like confronting them. One of them runs. The other one tries to run.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of jogging next to him, and I see him start to get tired. He's like slowing down and breathing hard. I'm like, bro, I can do this. And he stole my training gear. I had a picture signed for one of my friends, Dr. Kim, who asked for a signed picture to put in his office. So they found that picture. They smashed it. And it was me and my UFC gloves and my – so they knew who I was. I'm a trained fighter, surely. And so this guy knew what he was in for.
That's
so
awesome.
He had a screwdriver in his pocket, and I told him, I was like, bro, I can chase you all day. I was like, you can either just stop, or we can keep running. And at that point, he panicked, and he, I see what you did there. At that point, he panicked, and he pulled out a screwdriver, and he tried to rush me with a screwdriver. So
dude, these guys have some guts, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, dude. So they had a picture of you in your gear. Did you sign for someone?
Yeah, it's
they
the UFC
smash
pictures
it.
That we were like holding with our gloves up, you know, posing. So
the guy's wearing your clothes in your car, and then he's gonna stab you with a
screwdriver.
This is incredible.
So he lunges at me with a screwdriver. I push, kick him in the stomach, and just got lucky with the timing, I guess, because he was like took the breath out of him right away. Just like,
well, I think you actually kicked pretty hard, so it might be more than
just,
luck.
He just laid down on the ground, and so I start pulling all my clothes off. I'm like dragging him. I'm dragging him down the street by like my pants. I'm like, give me my pants back. And finally, like, I make him sit down on the curb until the cops come, and they were able to help me out. And once the cops got there, they were actually super cool and extremely helpful. So that was good. That was good.
That is awesome. And so was the car in decent shape?
Nothing wrong with the car. Got all my stuff back. Dude tried to lie about where he put everything, but luckily, like, I saw where they parked my car, and it wasn't far from my car, so I was able to get all my stuff back. So at the end of the day, it was not a problem.
Yeah, it was not a problem. You missed one day of practice. You have a good story to tell about it.
Who knows what they did in my car? Dirty Mike and the boys. But, you know, it's all good.
That is so funny. We got to show some of those pictures.
I'm pretty sure you finished solving crime by, like, midday. When I dropped by, and it was 12 o'clock, and he's like...
I was ready for another case. I called my buddy Anthony, who fights with us. He's a police officer. And it's like, hey, man, you guys got any more cases you need solved by the end of the day?
Yeah.
I was talking trash to all my police officer friends.
Dude, the irony is the same thing happened for me in front of your house as well. Remember that? My Nova got stolen?
That's right. Yes.
In front of the same spot. I mean,
and you were able to get yours back, too.
Yeah, I actually left my keys in the ignition. I was having a rough day.
Well, I kind of left my keys in the car, too. So okay. It was in my gym bag, and it's a key fob, so you don't actually have to have it in the ignition to get it going. So
that is awesome.
I think they were just stealing stuff out of my car, and they just lucked out.
They're like, oh.
I left the key fob in there.
So you solved that. You solved that riddle of your car. I ended up getting my car back at the same scenario because of the guys that stole the car must have figured out it was my car. Then they called, somehow got Tommy's number off the internet and thought it was my number. And Tommy is my right-hand man, helps me run
my life.
Who has
his own security service.
Too. Yeah, yeah, he has a massive security company. It's your turn?
It's your turn. I moved here.
So he calls Tommy and tries to get a... He tries to get a ransom for my car. You want to see this car? I want such and such money. And Tommy's like, why don't we just call the cops and come get it from you? Then the guy hangs up and he calls back and is arguing with his wife. And he's like, oh, I got the car, blah, blah, and I just want... And then his wife's like, you dumbass, give him the car. Just give him his car back and this and that. And then we have a bunch of buddies that wrestled with us in college. And basically, you know, have multiple friends on the SWAT team, on all sorts of, you know, law enforcement, my brother-in-law. And so we had a pretty strong crew that was – on top of it. They figured out where the guy was. The guy said, you know, where the car was and just basically gave it up. So you went and found yours, beat the guys up. My guys just gave it back, which is after trying to get a ransom and his wife talked some sense into him. So it's a great story here.
For sure.
He's got this car stolen. All right, here we go. All right, let's go, buddy. This is not our best chess, but we're doing our best.
It definitely adds a different dynamic, storytelling while making moves on this chessboard. For sure.
So, Alex, you're from Texas originally?
Yes.
And born there?
Born and raised in Texas.
Nice. Yep. And you got kind of a late start in wrestling, but wrestling is your base?
Correct.
So yep. Why did you get a late start, and who recruited you? How'd you get wrestling in your life?
Yeah, so I started wrestling, let me think, towards the end of my freshman year of high school. So, mm-hmm. So I started pretty late. And then
your turn.
My health teacher got me into wrestling. He was the wrestling coach. He's a good old boy from Oklahoma, Steve Davis. Incredible wrestling
Steve
coach.
Steve Davis.
Yeah, shout out Steve Davis. He was... really, really big part of getting me started and really knew his stuff. He was a great wrestling coach. I really lucked out with that guy. And then
what is the state of Texas like? Is it one state tournament or is there multiple divisions?
There's one state tournament.
There isn't class A and class B and class C.
No, we just have one big old
state tournament. Oh, I didn't know that.
And Texas wrestling isn't super tough, but the high school that I went to, we really didn't compete in the state because for that reason, we at the time, and it's gotten much better. Yeah, so my freshman and sophomore year, I went to the Colony High School. And then I ended up, Steve Davis, the guy I previously mentioned, he left. And he got a job at Flower Mound High School. And when he left, I started kind of looking around at different schools. And ended up going to a school called Bishop Lynch, who at the time had the number two school in the country for wrestling. They were really good. They had an incredible coaching staff. They had Kenny Monday.
Oh, wow.
We had Jameel Kelly. We had... let's see who.
This was at your high school?
It was a high school. We had like a Mongolian.
That's two Olympians.
A multiple time Mongolian world champ.
Oh my gosh.
Brandon Slay was coaching at the.
Slay, gold medalist?
Gold medalist. He was coaching at the club, wrestling club I was going to. We had. Kendall Cross was there the year before.
Oh my gosh.
So it really was. It was better than most college rooms who we had. So I think that's why I was able to start so late and still have so much success and learn so much was because of the people the minds we were surrounded by.
So that's like some of the greatest wrestlers in U.S. history.
Right.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And so that's, you got your start in, you know, as a freshman or eighth grade?
Freshman.
As a freshman in high school.
Ninth grade, the end of my ninth grade. I was playing soccer for most of the year. And then, I actually got into a fight in a soccer game. And the soccer coach talked to the wrestling coach, and we kind of got me into wrestling. I fell in love with it. My mom's from Pennsylvania, too. So she grew up, you know, wrestling's the sport there. In Texas, it's football. And so she was always pushing me to be a wrestler. And I never really gave it a shot until I got to high school. And yeah, I ended up falling in love with it and never really looked back.
So I thought that there was multiple divisions. I know a lot of high schools have those, 1A, 2A, 3A, et cetera. One of the things about California that makes it so tough is that we have one tournament, one high school tournament, or one college or one state tournament. Sorry. Getting confused here. It's threatening the queen hard.
I know. I'm pushing her out of here. You had to bring her out in the beginning, man. I got to get her out of here.
California has, I think, maybe three times as many competitors in the state than the highest second participation school. And at least that was that way a couple years ago. And we only have one state tournament. But it's picking up popularity everywhere else, especially with a room like that.
Yeah, especially now. We got now Texas wrestling is doing really, really well. And it's because I think we had incredible coaches come and influence the state so much that now we got guys like Ferrari from Oklahoma State. He's the kid who just won an NCAA title.
Uh-huh.
He is originally from Texas. Allen High School is bringing out a lot of really high-level wrestlers. Our high school, we competed at the biggest tournaments in the country. We were at Beast of the East. We were at Ironman. We were at Final Four. We were getting invited to the big ones. So that's really where I was able to pick up a lot of experience and get a lot of matches. I think I wrestled like 80 matches my senior year.
That's wild, man. 80 matches. That's crazy.
80 matches, yeah. I think I was like 72-1 my senior year.
Wow. Wait, that was one season, 80 matches?
Yeah, in my senior year, I went 72-1, and I lost that. I got second place at Ironman.
So you guys that don't know the wrestling world, that's 80 competitions in 1 year for folks that want to come in and get some idea of, you know, what you're going against with a high-level wrestler. That's just one season in high school. If you've got guys like Lance Palmer and Chad Mendez and TJ Dillashaw and Cody Garbrandt, those kind of guys start when they're 4 or 5 years mm-hmm. old, and 80 is a lot of matches to have in 1 year. I mean, that's quite a bit, but some of these guys are getting thousands of matches before they even get into college.
Yeah, we're not even talking about freestyle and Greco. Yeah. That was just folk style.
Oh, my gosh. So that's incredible.
Then we're doing all the freestyle matches, Fargo, and
okay, I'm gonna try to move quick here.
Senior nationals.
There you go. We need to get timers in this thing, Tuss, Jonah. So we get a timer, and I think there's we have the game, and then we'll have the timer. Whoever spins, because they have those professional timers where you hit one side, hit the other side, right? And then whoever has the most time or the least amount of time spent should get a victory, and then the person that wins the game should get a victory.
There we go.
Not that I'm gonna, you know, have an advantage in either side, but I just, it'd be interesting to know. Then you have a guy like Slava. Slava just fought this last weekend, getting his wrestling chops down. But he's had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of professional or Muay Thai or kickboxing fights.
Right.
So that's the other side of things. And then it's a catch-up game when you're blending everything together. So it's wild to think all of the let me see here, hold on a second. All the different disciplines. You got a Raymond Daniel who is in here today, one of the best of all time on full contact karate and kickboxing put together. He's in here. We've got guys like Ricardo that have been doing jiu-jitsu. Is your first discipline? Yeah, jiu-jitsu. How old were we when you started jiu-jitsu?
14.
Yeah, then you have the guys that are blending it all together and starting from a young edge, blending it all together, a young age. Guys like Bopo and Andrew Coyne and all the young bucks. Yeah, all these guys that are getting it from the get-go. There we go. Okay, we'll put the pressure on. This chess game has been overlooked. It's
speaking of Raymond Daniels, that guy is a wealth of knowledge. Not only is he an incredible fighter, but he's an incredible coach. The way he explains things and breaks things down is really on another level. It's a lot of fun learning from him and getting to work with him too, especially for my next fight. You know, I got a similarly tall opponent. I think it's been really nice having him to work with, and same kind of karate-ish style. Raymond is the man.
Dude, sure. I mean, I think... did you see that highlight reel he put out the other day? Like, somebody else put it out first, but it was like Raymond Daniels' best knockouts.
Yeah.
That was crazy, dude. Yeah. I mean, like, literally just ripping guys apart with stuff that you wouldn't even think would work. You know what I mean? Like, 360s, 720s, faking one way, going another, spin kicks, multiple spin kick knockouts, like, on the chin with high-level guys. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, stuff you'd see in a kung fu movie. He's doing in real life.
So, Raymond's honestly super impressive. But one of the most impressive things about Raymond, in my opinion, and we should get him on this, see if he plays a little chess as well. But he's been showing up to, like, all the drill classes, just super humble. He's going with guys that he knows are way, you know, way better than him in one area, not afraid to put himself in a dangerous position where he knows that you know he's not going to be the best, and just like a white belt mentality. So I like that about him, and he's what, 39 years old at this point, and he's just picking up and adding this new style to his repertoire and just making some waves. So it is fun and impressive to have him in here.
Absolutely.
Right. So Alex, you've been out here
About four years
now. Yep. And, you know, had some injuries throughout time, but we've had some pretty good success, because the truth is you've had, you know, only a few fights over a couple of years, and that got you to the big show. And at this point, we're going into our second actual UFC fight. And here we go. Going into our second.
I gave you a gift there. So.
Yeah.
Better capitalize.
Second UFC fight. And the first one was tough, man. We ran into a guy with a lot of experience. It was really good on the hands. And the thing I liked the most about that fight, and I've told you this and I've said it in front of the team, is you were in a position where the guy was getting the best of you in the stand-up area, and we weren't able to execute what we wanted to, and you just kept on coming. So although we got the first L, it was a good lesson learned. It was a good motivator. It was a good stepping stone to what's up next, and that's yeah. a big W here in a few weeks. And so, what was the takeaways from that fight? Because I know you never, especially you're a super competitive guy. You never right. like to lose. But what was that kind of like? And you know, you're not a stranger to having adversity. What was kind of the reset like?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a tough pill to swallow, but I learned a lot from it. I think in that fight, dude's a heavy hitter. I think he had like 9 knockouts out of 10 fights or something like that. It was yeah. like, you know, so that's something to be that you got to be aware of and be cautious with. And I think maybe I was just a little bit too cautious with that. And in my previous fights, I think, so I was mentioning Steve Davis earlier. He was my first wrestling coach, and he told me something a long time ago that has stuck with me. I was at a wrestling tournament, and I'd get done with a wrestling match, and I'd go look at my bracket, and I'd see who I had next and who he was wrestling, and I'd go and I'd sit down by the mat and I'd watch my opponent, and I'd see what they were doing, and I'd study him and try to figure out how I was going to beat him. And he came up to me and he's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, I'm studying this guy. I got this guy next. He's like, "Hey man, this guy's got to deal with you. You don't worry about what he's going to do. Worry about focus on what you're going to do." And I think that's been something that I've been able to
utilize,
and it's helped me out a lot. It's something that I've always been like that. Ever since then, I'm like, you know what, with fighting, this guy's locked in the cage with me. Whatever his skill set is, like, he's got to deal with what I'm bringing to the table. In that fight, I think I was a little more focused on what's he going to do. Stay away from the power. Being a little bit too cautious. Waiting for him to lose power, and about halfway through the second, I talked to a lot of people like, yeah, he'll slow down about halfway through the second, and then that's when we pick it up. And if you watch the fight, that's what happened. I spent the first round and a half being cautious and being safe and moving and kind of trying to figure him out and find my openings, and then I really started picking up steam at the end of the fight.
Yeah.
And that's I think that third round was – you know, where I did my best for sure.
Right.
was that end of the second, third round is where I started to shine a lot more. And that's because I started, it was my fight. Now I thought it's time for me to go.
Yeah.
And I think in that situation, it was a little too late.
Yeah.
You know, in that instance. But like I said, it was a good learning experience and moving yeah. forward.
And you proved to yourself and everyone, something everyone else. Well, you already knew it, but everyone else hadn't seen you in a battle where you're actually getting, you know, someone's getting the better of you. And like you said, you shined in the second portion of that fight and showed grit in the second portion of that fight. And that was, you know, something that we definitely can take. And take that last round and be like, all right, that's what we're building on going to the next round. We had yep. Song Yadong kind of had the same situation in his last fight where he was too little too late. The guy got off, he was going on a feeling out process, and literally the guy hit him, was on point, and got him with all of his you know, offense was on the button, and Song had a great third round. It's like, okay, well, let's build off that third round, mm-hmm. and we'll take it to the next fight. And so here we are, and how's preparation been going?
Really, really well. And, you know, I took that from the fight, and I realized, you know, I got to stop. Oh, I see what you did there.
Check. Hey, I'm pretty far behind. It's too little too late, but. You didn't see that?
I didn't see that.
Oh, I thought that's what you were talking about.
I didn't see that.
It's too little too late still, unfortunately. Still too little. I'm not giving up, but.
Not looking, you know, good, the honestly, the hardest pill for me to swallow is I had more in the tank. After the fight was over, I wanted to keep fighting. I really wish there was another round or two rounds, or I wish it was a 5-round fight. And that was hard for me to like feel like I didn't leave it all out there. It's my turn now. Yeah. Felt like I didn't leave it all out there. And yeah, man, that's definitely the toughest part of it, was feeling like I was leaving some in the reserve for the end. And, you know, I tried to, obviously the last portion of the fight, I gave it all I had, but
yeah, there's more. No, honestly, because what people don't get to see, and I was there at the end of it, and in the hotel room, and I took a picture of, or a video of your face, and I'm like, you know, you got to stay in losses like that. You got to stay positive, and you got to keep moving. And I said, man, I said, how are you feeling? Like, what? And he goes, honestly, dude, I feel like I want to fight tomorrow. And I was like, that's the right mentality. That's what we want to hear. And
yeah, absolutely. I was fired up after that fight. I wanted to fight him again, right then.
Nate Diaz has a great quote where he talks about that, and he's like, if you just lost to a fighter, and you don't want to fight, you know, fight that guy that same night, you're in the wrong sport. And I don't know. I've never thought of it like that per se, but. You know, you got to be cordial. You got to be a good sport, but you should have a little fire in your belly after a loss like that. You know, and and the fact that you got a little taste of defeat and it made you pissed off, that's a good thing. That's a great thing, actually.
Yeah, it was.
By the way, I let you off so bad, but anyways, on accident. But go ahead.
With what?
It's in the past.
Go ahead. All right, let's see. Oh, yeah, me too. I let you off, too.
Thanks. Just so you know, you were right here with your queen. You moved it right there, and I didn't see it. And I could have... For three moves, and I was hoping you weren't going to get it. Yeah, that was just me trying to chit-chat with my boy over here. So this Penna fight, is there... I mean, you've seen him a little bit. Is there anything that you like about his style? You got any compliments, any disses for the guy, or you don't really spend much time watching guys?
No, not really. Like I said earlier, this guy's, the way I see it is he's got to deal with me. Right. I'm not, you know, I know what he does.
Oh, you can't move there.
Yeah, man, he's tough, but this is the UFC. Everybody's tough, you know?
Right.
It's like, I'm not looking for easy fights. I like this fight. I think
it's your turn, by the way.
He's got a cool style. A style that a lot of people like.
There's some real irony in the whole thing too, which I'll talk about in a second. But yeah, he's got some good energy. He's got some good, some good style points. Some danger. I feel like he's got some jump knee finishes and whatnot that are pretty, pretty impressive, but at the end of the day, it's a good matchup. And you know what? Something about him, he's got a USA wrestling tattoo.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
It's a good sign, huh?
Yeah. But where did he wrestle?
I don't know where he wrestled. Maybe like, I think maybe like Arkansas.
I think somebody told me Arkansas. So
yeah, a lot of guys with USA wrestling tattoos, huh?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong on that one, but I'm pretty sure he has a USA wrestling tattoo, which isn't a bad thing. But I haven't been super impressed with his wrestling. So, but he does use it. He's a lanky guy and whatnot. But you have to have a little, a little battle for your wrestling prowess to figure out who's a better wrestler or who's a better striker. But nonetheless, he's got one up you on the wrestling scale for just having
just
the tattoo.
Having the tattoo, for sure. There, in that case, there's a lot of guys out there who one up me with the wrestling tattoo. yeah, I don't have any tattoos, so maybe that'll be my next one. We'll see.
Ricardo, have you done much research on your guy?
Yeah, a little bit. Every day I watch one of his fights just to get some information about it, but not too serious. But yeah, I know some about him for sure.
And Ricardo, what's your background? You said you started with jiu-jitsu, but then quickly moved into everything else. I feel like the style you have is super creative. Is that something that was taught to you, or is that your own kind of flavor?
Yeah, like my master, Marcelo from Brazil, he gave me the opportunity to train jiu-jitsu in his gym. So he opened his door for me to train jiu-jitsu. And then I could enjoy like all the other practices like judo, Muay Thai, MMA. And just for money, I started making MMA fights. So I think I did my first MMA fight before I do start Muay Thai.
Oh, nice.
So just for money, they paid like about $150, and it's like R$600 in Brazil. And they called me, hey, you want to fight this? And I say, fuck yeah, let's do it, you know, for $600, let's go. And I was like 16 years old, and I did my first pro MMA fight. And then I started to train like more striking and everything,
yeah,
just to get better. And just because my master, he always told me like, oh, you gotta be at the gym for the whole day. And I live at the gym. That was my house, yeah, for 7 years. And then I had like my whole day to spend at the gym training by myself, training with my master and with everyone that was at the gym, you know. So awesome. Yeah, my master, he always if someone comes to the gym, just arrive at the gym for, yeah, training, he brings me to train with like a partner for everyone. So nice. I train it with everyone at the gym. And then I spend a lot of time at the gym training everything. So I think that's how I get like a lot of information from all kind of styles, and start learning about other mixed martial arts. And that's how it started, I think.
The, oh no. Oh. Oh, goodness.
Thank you, Ricardo. Yeah, right. I appreciate that.
Oh, no.
And how do you start, Uriah?
Me? Well, I wrestled in college. I wrestled at UC Davis. And basically, it was a natural transition for me. I was going to either coach at the college level and start substitute teaching, which was going to pay, you know, hardly anything, and maybe work towards being a teacher and probably some sort of entrepreneur, you know. And I took my first fight. I had a friend that sold me a ticket, Tyrone Glover. He was a guy I wrestled at the same time in high school. He was at a different high school than I was, but we knew each other. And so I bought a ticket to watch him fight, and I was still in college. And I was like, oh, man, I know I'm going to do this. I just had always been a fan. I went there. I was just like, I got it in my gut that I was like, all right, this is definitely, you know, something that I will be doing. And then as soon as I graduated, it was like game on. I was, you know, making dog crap for money as far as, for pay as a coach. And then I was I was bussing tables, and I started a little business coaching kids. And I was 23, almost 24 when I started fighting. So I just was going to every gym in Sacramento and making a real living by piecing everything together, working 17 hours a day and getting good at whatever I could, you know. You know, it's funny that my fights, the way my career went, there was the way it fell, and I don't know how it was in Brazil per se, but there was a new TV station that was called like the sports, I don't know what was it called, like the outdoor channel, mm-hmm, is what it was. And that got bought by a company that was changing it to Versus, just VS, which is, you know, everything competition-wise. And the UFC bought the WEC in 2005, 2006, something like that. And then the WEC was part of a new programming push on Versus, and we were like the best programming they had. They had like rowing on there and bike riding, and and like fishing and that kind of stuff. So Versus went from the Outdoor Channel, went from the Outdoor Channel to Versus, and the WC was bought by the UFC. And this was when I was like going around collecting all the lightweight belts, you know, around the U.S. and in Canada, trying to just unify the lower class weight belts and everything. And so, so I was getting pushed by the Versus channel because I was the star on their new program, and I was getting pushed by the WEC, and I was getting pushed by the UFC. So it was like kind of a perfect storm for when I was, you know, just right in the mix. But they would play my fights over and over and over and over again because they only had a certain amount of programming. And my fights were like exciting at the time and a little different. If you had the Versus channel, it was like a good chance that you had like at maybe 40% of the program was a fight I was in. So it was like anybody that had that channel see me. Yeah.
Or maybe like Access or something. That Access TV.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's still a thing, but I know they used to show a bunch of fights on there too. Yeah.
Yep. Oh my God.
Yes.
No.
Hey!
No. Hey! That's for me letting you go earlier, man.
Oh, man.
The Alpha Gambit.
What just happened?
The Alpha Gambit. Oh, this is good. It could be called Gandhi Fight Club. That was another name we thought about. Oh, I needed that.
Dude, you really did.
Yes. Thank you, Ricardo.
I had this in the bag.
Hey, thank you, Ricardo.
I wasn't even sweating it.
Man, last time when I lost, we had a thing. We had Jonah and Tuss had to do a stare down. If I was going to come back and get the W, which didn't happen, then Jonah was going to have to spar Tuss. But it turned out being a... But we got a stare down. It was nasty. I mean, as you know, Jonah looks exactly like Cody Garbrandt.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that was... It was quite the scenario there.
No, you got
to... I think we're going to make a rule of...
you get one?
In We got to make some special rules since we're not experienced at doing interviews and playing chess. But
that it really does add another dynamic,
dude. It's great.
Well,
I have the responsibility of keeping the conversation going, so I've got a better excuse than you do
for sure.
I think we maybe need to put that back on the plate where Jonah has to spar Tuss. I just don't know.
For sure,
Jonah. How much do you weigh? 140. You really wear 140? Let me just tell you, I had a guy who looks like you, body size. He was my roommate, put in the dorms with me. His name was Hui Tran, but they called him Tony. Because he was a bit of a gangster for his time. Okay, hold on a second. Now I got to think. But anyways, he would wear double sweatpants. He would wear sweatpants underneath his jeans, and he would wear big shoes and roll-up socks and wear two pairs of socks and put extra socks in the front of his thing, and he was always trying to look bigger. I don't believe you weigh 140 pounds.
You guys love cold time, bro. Always.
That's awesome.
I know how it's done. I used to be that guy.
We're gonna have to put Jonah on the scale, man. If you make a comeback, Jonah will weigh in in his underwear on the scale.
All right, now I got to. Just for the
you
ladies.
Gotta see this. Just for the ladies, so the ladies can see. what time is it? Oh, that left a big.
Oh,
that,
we gotta call it a game then, huh?
Oh shoot, wrap it up.
We'll call it a draw.
I wish I would have. That was another one of my excuses for last time. I was, you know, I was trying to get through the hit a time crunch. Man. And Alex, your athleticism and I'd say coordination, but explosivity is some of the best I've seen, period. I know your dad's a gymnastics coach. I mean, was he on the gymnastics train? So, like, you do that all growing up?
Yeah, my dad had me doing like Ninja Warrior stuff my whole life. He had me hanging on rings when I was 6 months old. He had me I mean, my dad's been just like training me nonstop. Yeah. He used to wake me and my brother.
Which is crazy because your dad, you guys look like brothers. I mean, he's so young.
Yeah, he's been always like, always eating healthy, always on top of his health and fitness. And I would go to the gym and he would like, he would fill the leg press up on both sides with 45s. And then he'd have me and my brother and my sister sit on top of it and just start repping it out.
He's not a big guy either.
He's not. No.
Dude.
Yeah, he doesn't. He probably weighs like 150 something, and he maxes on bench like, I think he just broke his record like a few years ago at like 510 pounds.
Oh my gosh!
Bench press. He's
and you got to see he
really is like
he's like my size.
Different kind of animal. Yeah, yeah. He's I can't hang with him in the gym. I try to lift with him and I just can't. I remember I came back from college.
You're moving.
And I was lifting really really hard. And I thought, all right, this is my chance. I got him. And he did. I didn't stand a chance. I thought I had him like the first three sets, and I found out he was just warming up, and he smoked me.
That's awesome. And then your mom too. I mean, if you look at Alex and his mom and his dad and his siblings, they all look like siblings. His mom is like, you know, fit, in shape, just. Bubbly attitude and just positive all the time. I mean, I feel like you guys have like a bunch of teenagers in your
yeah.
You guys got lucky on the gene pool there.
Yeah, but absolutely.
Is that
my parents don't have vices either. They don't smoke, they don't drink, they don't
right.
They eat healthy, they go to bed early, they wake up early. As a kid, my dad used to wake us up, me and my brother and my sister, he'd wake us all up at 6 and we'd go to the soccer field and run laps and do soccer drills and like
check.
They're a testament to what a strict lifestyle and just being healthy and on top of it 24/7 for, you know,
their whole life.
Their whole yeah. lives. And they look like it.
Yeah, so. That's awesome, man. And so I was talking about the irony with the Violent Bob Ross. For those that don't know, Alex is super, super talented when it comes to art, and we've been talking about doing a couple of different things. We want to let the cat out of the bag, but, I mean, some of the stuff you do, painting, you know, the things you can build, you know, built all this cool furniture inside the house and gets driftwood and does this and that, sculptures, and it's all freehand, too, which I can draw pretty well, but it's all I use... What's it called? Like framing with that.
Like a chart.
Yeah, like a chart, charted out and everything. But yours is all freehand. Is that something that's been natural? Is that something you've worked on? I know your dad's an artist.
My dad's an incredible artist. Okay. Way better than... He does what I do in a quarter of the time. He has a very fast hand and is just like... He has an eye for things.
Check, by the way.
So, yeah. As far as like the woodworking stuff goes, I actually... Lucky. Yeah. So the guy who made this table, a good buddy of mine, he actually ended up hooking me up with like a bunch of his live edge pieces.
This guy, the guy that did this, he's like a wood nut. Like yes. He's like, you know.
So he saw some of my artwork and he was like, hey man, if you want to come by my scrapyard, and he was like, you can take
is it your turn?
Whatever you want, basically. So he basically just loaded my truck up like 2 or 3 times with like beautiful pieces of black walnut and redwood, and so I've been able to like start playing with woodworking and stuff like that, and it's a lot of fun. And honestly, I just try to learn new stuff all the time. Like I think that it translates to what we do here, as far as like we're constantly trying to learn. And I think the more things you don't know how to do and learn how to do, you realize it's not that hard to learn new stuff as long as you're just willing to like go through, like mess up a few times. You know what I mean? And that's how it is with any of the martial arts. You want to learn striking, well, you have to start striking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's the only way to do it. So I think trying to become like a jack of all trades, I guess, it really does stay creative outside of the gym, helps me stay creative inside of the gym. And that's why I do it. And it's fun ways to kind of keep myself busy, and it doesn't wear on my body too much. So
yeah, it's got to be a nice, I mean, it's got to be a nice mental release too. I mean, we go out and have pretty hard days, and the stuff you're making is super cool. And, thank you. You know, I think now that you've start to sell some of your stuff, the more, you know, the more people can get involved on, you know, taking advantage of that, the better, because this is the way it works, guys. When people die, their artwork is worth more. When people get famous, their artwork's gonna get more valuable. Right now, Alex is a little secret. You're getting to know him right now. He's had one little fight in the UFC, but actually, he was on Dana White's Contender Series also. Big win there. And then also Dana White looking for a fight in Hawaii. So it's kind of like three involved in the promotion on some level. But nonetheless, things are about to blow up. And if you get a piece of his artwork now, oh, snap. I blew it.
So I'm waiting, just biding my time.
Dude, what was I thinking? If you buy now, you're going to get a good deal when Alex hits it big.
Heck yeah. Yeah, man, I've been really lucky that I've actually been able to sell quite a bit of art. I did it as something at first just to kind of fill up my walls and keep me busy and make my house a home. And it's turned into something that I've actually been able to make a substantial amount of money doing. And people really enjoy it, which is super cool for me. Artwork is, we don't have a website up yet, but we're working closely with our friend Corey McKenna, who also fights in the UFC. She is an incredible artist herself. And Uriah, we've been talking about kind of collabing on a piece, you and I. Hopefully we'll get some of your artwork up and Corey's, and get a website going real soon and really be able to showcase this stuff.
That's it. It's your move. That's your move, right? All right. This is a comeback. And it's the funny thing is there's so many missed opportunities. I'm going to get better at doing this. This is only the second time. And Ricardo, you know how to play?
We've been training for this now for this moment. No, nice. Me, Ricardo, and Isaac, we got Isaac's
sessions.
Yeah, we've been getting training sessions. Isaac's our buddy from Australia who's out here training with us. Really bright up and comer, and he.
So is who's also the who's really the head big. Of the household?
Oh, I think I don't remember who won the last game. I think I got the last game between me and Isaac. We've been back and forth though. We have a book, Chess for Dummies, that every time you lose, you get the book and you get to go study it. So you handed the book.
That's awesome.
So it's been cool. We're also all in fight camp together too. So we're all staying in the same house. Everybody's
they're all in the that's the room. That's the house that Cody and I both stayed in.
Yep.
That's right.
House of champs.
The House of Champs, baby. Let's go. Check.
Get a dub and then get out there and hop in your corner, Ricardo. I've been in Ricardo's corner pretty much for six years now.
That's wild.
And this is the first one that we're both on the. I've been cornering him in the UFC for so long, and
I had to fill in because you got scheduled, and I was in Abu Dhabi with Nad, and so I got to jump in and corner.
That's right, but it's been cool because every time Ricardo's in, you know, I've kind of count those as like reps for myself. You know, I get to go backstage and I get to go through the process with him and visualize myself being there, in a way. So it's cool to be able to. Finally actually be there with him after all this time, you know?
That's killer. Check. I think this is checkmate. I think it is. Oh, man, I needed this, Tuss. I needed this, you know, after the day I've had, boy.
I'm glad I could be the one to make the day better.
Bro, I really appreciate that. Thank you.
So friends Ricardo, are cool, man.
Thanks for being here to witness this, man. Now I got one more. Now we've got at 6 o'clock. We need to get in and do a
jiu-jitsu,
and that'll make me feel better also. Unless you guys whoop me up in jiu-jitsu, but that's not gonna happen. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. guys, we got two killers. The 1-2 punch. So we got Ricardo and Alex both fighting on April 17th.
Back to back.
Two big wins, and going to do it in style. So thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed it. Finally got a victory. It's about time. What's up, guys? Hope you like this episode of CaliCast. We still have not named this portion of it. We have the MMAU, just a regular CaliCast, and this is a game of chess. We have some great suggestions, but if you have a suggestion, first subscribe to the channel. If you have any questions, say below, and give us some suggestions down below. I want to know what we should name this segment of the CaliCast. We're going to mental battle. We've got Gandhi Fight Club behind us. We're in one of the most iconic gyms in California, the U.S., and the world. And it's up to you to help us find this name. So subscribe, comment below, and let us know.